This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu, and here in front of me is Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia.
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
All right. What do you have for us?
Quite a few things. You know, I just had to make a dash back from one of the many events happening at the One ASEAN Entrepreneur Summit. You know, just off the junction of Jalan Kia Ping, a Malaysian Design Center. And I was moderating the keynote, you know, speak by the head of the London Business Angels Group, yeah? So we were just, he was giving his talk about his experience as an angel investor, and then I came on and did my little mini Bhangra on stage for half an hour. And it was quite interesting because now the reason why we're having this is obviously, you know, when you're trying to grow the tech ecosystem, angel investing is one of the, like, you know, they're one of the unsung heroes, but they play a key role because every large company you want to mention now, and you can mention them at random, they had their first break, you can say the first investors were angel investors. I mean, first round maybe pharma, right? Father, mother, family funds. But then coming the angel investors. And so we want to, in Malaysia, and even in ASEAN, right, all the governments realize that you want to create that ecosystem of investors, high net worth individuals, who have got disposable income and trying to persuade them, instead of putting your money into property, as we've discussed before, put it into, you know, bet on people, bet on entrepreneurs, especially those who are trying to do something in the tech space. And that's the rationale and the motivation for this two-day conference. And
right.
Having him then, Andrew, talk about, you know, his experience being an angel investor in the UK. Mm. So lots of things to talk about. There were some great questions from the audience also. And I think one of the key takeaways is that Andrew says you want to be able to, there must be education on the part of high net worth individuals in how you be an angel investor also. Because one of the things, if you're a control freak, then stay away.
Mm.
You know, because you're betting on people, really. It comes down to people times three. And so then you don't want to then micromanage or try to tell them what to do or even take a very large stake. Typically, angel investors cap it at maybe 30-33%.
And the property won't go away, see?
Yeah.
The property won't talk back to you.
No, won't talk back, won't disobey you and all that. And guaranteed, you know, after 18 months of unsleepless nights, you know, you'll make at least a 50%, you know, return. So it's difficult. But we're trying to change it. And I think Dr. Siva Palan, who is the president of the Malaysian Business Angels Network, in his keynote says that the time is right now for people to consider being angel investors because he doesn't think property will give you the returns it has. You know, maybe in the next 18 months, 2 years, you won't see that. So come into this. And so you had, you know, the UK angel experience. And now in Malaysia, we've got 7 angel clubs, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, because the London one is very aggressive.
Yeah, but it has taken them, to be fair, it's a 20-year club. And so that's why, you know, this gentleman also said that, hey, look, it's going to take a while. And really started moving 10 years ago when the government started helping also. So in Malaysia, because you're aware of the mistakes other countries have made and we are, you know, a country in a hurry, so the government has come in with some especially that policy where, actually it's not a policy, it's an incentive where if you invest up to half a million ringgit in a company, and it must be a company that's like has got a technology play to it, hold it for 2 years, and after that you can offset that half a million against the income taxes, personal income taxes, not corporate income tax, you know, that you're paying. So apparently, you know, when we wrote about it then in Malaysia, they're saying, and even people from outside Malaysia say it's the best angel tax incentive in the world.
In the world, huh?
So huge advantage. But now you've got to promote it and educate the market that this is there. So MBAN is doing monthly pitching sessions, you know, for their investors. They curate emerging entrepreneurs who want to come out, curate, meaning they try to find those who are a bit more advanced in their idea, already doing something, they put money down, they own money down, and they're looking for the angel investor. Then they say, okay, I think you guys are ready, so you come and pitch to our investors. So they curate it so that there's better quality deals for our angel investors. This is a monthly thing that they force themselves to do, and they're finding that it has got some benefits. And tomorrow is the event, their monthly pitch session for the month of November. Yeah. over 30 entrepreneurs have called them and say, hey, we want to be part
of
that.
Fantastic. And it's good. You know, I mean, I guess if you know that the money is on the table, right, then it will encourage people to come up with ideas and business ideas, you know.
Yes. But when you say money on the table, the one golden rule is that if you want to, you expect money from someone, you better have put money in yourself.
Exactly.
You must have skin in the game.
Yeah.
It's been told to me to my face before when I was looking for funding, and that hasn't gone away. Because if somebody's going to give you his or her hard-earned money, they want to know how much pain are you willing to go through, how much sacrifice are you willing to go through, right, to chase your dream.
No pain, no gain.
Yeah, it's totally so true. So our angel ecosystem is doing quite interesting thing. It's a two-day conference ongoing right now. Mm. If you want to go down there, I think entrance is free. I think there are 300 over people sign up. And when I left, I think you had at least 50 more seats available that people could go and just learn and appreciate and network. And the angel investors from 6 ASEAN countries there.
Yeah.
So you've got, there's a lot of money in that hall, you know. Just go and you know, meet people, shake some hands.
It's a $600 million people market.
People market, which I dispute. I think the market is really much smaller, but that's a topic for another day. It's really the middle class.
Now Magic had its MAP demo day on Monday and you came away impressed. MAP meaning?
Magic Accelerator Program.
Yes.
So that was interesting. That was really interesting because it was absolutely worth the time. So, you know, we've spoken about this before. They had 50 startups from around the region, one from Uruguay, one from the US, and I think one from the Europe, at least Czech Republic, the lady was, who also wanted to be part of the program because they were building products that would solve a pain point in Malaysia, maybe the Middle East. And so they've come. So 50. You know. So, and these are not new companies. These are companies which have been around for a while. So that means the entrepreneurs have already experienced leading people and you know, serving customers. So that's why this MEP is a it's an acceleration program. So it's looking for high growth companies. So bring these 50 in. And after that 4-month period of mentorship and sharing sessions, you know, and going out and meeting companies, being exposed, and companies, you know, corporates coming to visit them. Demo day was on Monday, and yet 150 investors from around the world, some even came from the US, from Japan, a lot from within the region, coming to listen to these companies. And I was impressed. So during the break, then I spoke to Ganesh Kumar Banga, who was there, and he says that this was the best demo day he had ever attended.
Wow.
So normally when you go for demo days, you're actually trying to give yourself a reason for, maybe I'll listen to this company later on, I'll catch up with the guy. But here, you know, the quality is good. So Ganesh was going, okay, I'm not interested in these guys. I'm not interested in these guys. So you're actually canceling off your list because you know there'll be enough people you'll be interested in. I thought that's interesting how you approached it. Then I spoke to this Dutch guy. Let me see if I do not mangle his name. Michael Wins. So he's the CEO of this fund called Crystal Horse Investments, although I still insist they should be renamed Crazy Horse. I had some Japanese investor laughing his head off last night when I said I prefer to call him Crazy Horse. And I said I've rebranded them on air too. But that aside, because so they've invested in at least 9 Malaysian companies and they've got investment in Singapore. He said that, look, the quality of the entrepreneurs here that I'm hearing is on par with what I've heard from accelerators in Singapore when they've had their demo day.
Right.
And, you know, Singapore has the advantage of being a global city. So you already get this, you know, population from around the world coming and, you know, and being there. So this was great. It was a great, a demo day for Magic. And for guys in the ecosystem, for guys and girls of the Malaysian ecosystem, this is a fantastic place for you to go and invest your full day there because Magic itself as a building is quite small. And so you get to meet so many people. You got that casual, instances where you meet someone grabs out and touches your shoulder as you're walking by, hey, you know, and you talk to them, exchange cards, get an update. Absolutely great, you know, investment of your time. And the fact that this is going to be done twice in next year, they're going to do 2 cohorts next year, is fantastic.
Okay.
And the word of mouth from the entrepreneurs in this program was so positive that when they go back to their countries, you know that more entrepreneurs, you know, are going to want to be part of the, you know, Magic Acceleration Program. Critical for Magic because Magic itself now, and they recently introduced this, they've got a big, they've got their own BARC now. BARC is, of course, you know, Big Hairy Audacious Goal. And they actually the vision is to make Malaysia the startup capital of Asia. I looked at it and I did a double flip. I waited for the vision statement to come again. I thought maybe ASEAN, no, Asia. So that's very ambitious, right? But you always say that you got to dream big and then aim high, right?
Yeah.
So credit to them that they want to do that. Quite gutsy to put that out there. But this map is going to be an anchor program of that. You're going to get much better quality entrepreneurs coming in. And it's 60% Malaysian entrepreneurs, 40% non-Malaysian. Now, all entrepreneurs get their flight in. Of course, the Malaysians, if you're coming in from Sabah, Sarawak, you get a flight ticket in. It's paid for and some stipend for food and accommodation. And as a taxpayer, maybe you may be wondering, hey, why is my tax dollar going, 40% of it going to these non-Malaysian companies? The reason is simple. You know, these are all entrepreneurs, right? So we're filtering and trying to pick the better ones to come here and mingle with our entrepreneurs. And in the 4 months, you learn, you form relationships.
Yeah.
And Cheryl and Magic emphasize that. Of course, Cheryl, they emphasize that a lot, that it's this soft element that we want to inculcate and create, because companies will come and go, but the entrepreneurs stay, and you may try another venture, and then suddenly, because of your experience at Magic, at MAP, you've got entrepreneurs, in Vietnam, in Korea, in Japan, in Malaysia, in Singapore, Thailand, and Indonesia, opportunities for you to build a business next time faster with a network already in place. And I spoke to entrepreneurs too. They absolutely love that. I have an amazing quote from one entrepreneur who was just gushing about the networks he created. And already one of the entrepreneurs said that he will connect him with his network, for him to help get an inroad into the business, into the market in Indonesia.
Right.
Fantastic, right? Mm. You don't have to go through MarTrade, although I hear MarTrade is doing a great job, but you don't have to go through MarTrade or you go through other things.
Well, I guess more channels of distribution.
More channels, of distribution, of networks, of access,
It just makes it easier.
It's very good. And I spoke to many Malaysian entrepreneurs that they all love this program and the impact it's going to have. So fantastic job by Magic.
And you've got lots of things to cover as
really,
well.
Really,
yes. So Karimjit from Digital News Asia Tech will stop for now. Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu. It's Tech Talk. Karimjit Singh from Digital News Asia here.
Keeping it tight and concise.
Yeah, right. He hasn't finished talking from this last point. What was your last point?
No, the fact that Magic's target is for 20% of the companies that made a pitch on Demo Day to be funded within 6 months. But Cheryl herself got excited during the press conference. I think we can hit 50%. But we'll hold them to 20%.
Well, they'll make sure they're good businesses that we're funding, right?
Of course, it's not we. So the money comes from all the private money coming out. It's not government money funding them. Of course, MEFCAP was there. They may invest, but you've got just better quality deal flow. Exciting.
Okay. Now, telcos are having a 4G,
even more exciting.
4G war of words, but you think the customer doesn't care even though they'll benefit from this?
Yeah.
What is this?
I think because now, I think on October 13, that's why I got to say 18 to some people, yeah? Anyway. On October 13, Alban Murthy, the CEO, made the claim that they now have the widest 4G LTE network in Malaysia, covering 50% of the population. And I brought that up on air, and what I was impressed with was that from October 13 till the end of the year, Alban said that they're going to be rolling out an additional 1,500 4G LTE sites. Mm. So if you're a Digi customer, you're going to be really happy about that. Not happy is Maxis, because they feel that they have the best network in town. And what happened was that I think 2 weeks after that, Maxis had its quarterly announcement, and then Morton said that, look, Maxis keeps investing more than anybody to provide our customers the best data network with a particular focus on LTE leadership. And he said that Maxis over last quarter spent $359 million, to improve his network. And he actually now covers 55% of the population, therefore making them the fastest, he added fastest, and widest 4G LTE coverage in the country. And then what has happened then? Subsequently, Maxis didn't rest on that. They now have actually publicly made known their criteria they use, the technical criteria they use for measuring the quality of their network.
I tell you.
And they actually had a media briefing to share this, and they wanted to do a campaign around that. And the print media who were there declined to be part of it because they didn't want to upset their some of their advertisers
as well.
And then but which is fair. But then then those readers of those products don't get an honest shake of what's going on.
Let
right?
Let me see who advertises.
Yeah, exactly. Maxis is raising the bar and he's saying, hey, guys, come on, let's show me. I've shown you what I got. Show me what you've got, right?
I tell you.
And even better is that Maxis is now posing the question, how 4G is your 4G? And it's inviting the chief engineers of Cellcom and Digi to discuss and the adoption of common technical standards for 4G LTE. And they want to have this open forum on November 23. And when my colleague Kay asked the CMO of DG, Tiran Kristen, Kristen, yeah. He said he didn't know about it, but I'm telling you now, Kristen is saying November 23rd.
So you'll be there, lah.
No, it depends on whether Celcom and DG agree to this, like, have a discussion. But, you know, MCMC is going to love this because finally, you know, because of the competition, and we've said before, they're all just, the competition is so ferocious.
Right.
Now, Maxis is raising his mind, say, hey, let's talk good. About so what the technical specifications are.
And when all the bars are raised, the customers are happy.
Yeah, because now they're each going to raise to improve their network quality so that their customers enjoy a great quality service, right? And they stay with them. So this is what's going on. And I think afterwards, actually, at 2:30, Maxis is yet having another briefing, you know, for the media. Actually, they're going to launch their own engineers going around the country to test their own network to see how robust it is. So this is all coming out, lah. So there have been one or two articles out already by bloggers. And then, but I think DNA's Edwin Yap is going to be doing a very thoughtful and a little piece on this for next week.
Okay.
So look out for that because, right. Edwin was a telco engineer, you know, starting off his career.
Okay.
So lots of interesting going on. One thing was interesting was that when DG had a press conference before Maxis' press conference later, they kind of said that, look, we think this is a... They dismissed Maxis' claims and they said this is a social media gimmick. Now, I was on TV yesterday and I said that I think that is an unfair, you know, remark to make. You know, Maxis is a serious company and they don't do things gimmicky or, you know, on a fickle nature.
Jeng.
Yeah. So they're just putting it out there saying, you claim this, let's put it all out there, right? Let's look at our technical specifications. So, very interesting. The bar is being raised between them. Conspicuously missing from this is Celcom. They're keeping quiet now. And that's because our sources tell them that their network is not at the level that they want it to be yet. So, they're a bit behind in upgrading their network.
Oh,
upgrading is a continual basis, by the way. Yeah? Because the demands are so high.
Who's ahead the game?
Yeah. So, okay. It's these two guys making the front. And, you know, at the bottom of this, the bottom line is, because we've said this before, life is going digital, right?
Okay.
It's all about data. And in
so
fact,
we'll find out November 23rd.
Not only that, life is going digital, and I think it's time to I'm going to disrupt Maslow's theory of needs. You know, he's got this Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Because
the foundation is physiological needs, which is food, right? Then you've got shelter, then you've got sex. And then I'm saying that along with sex, you've got to add the smartphone too. And then you've got self-actualization. You've got self-esteem and self-actualization. So you heard it here first on BFM. It's a world exclusive. Maslow's hierarchy of needs has been disrupted.
Debunked.
By DNA. Yeah. No, not debunked. It's been disrupted by DNA.
Okay.
Next to sex is smartphones.
So why is a digital window for hotels closing fast? And who's saying this?
Well, this is one of the entrepreneurs we met. And, in the many stories that DNA does. So they're just saying that hotels, beyond a website, right, you need a lot more than that. You need to be digital friendly in all manners of the word. And, you know, these guys throw out stats from, there's so many stats out there, right? 148 million bookings are made each year and, you know, whatever percent.
Yeah, yeah.
So, sorry, the person who said this is the CEO of Fast Booking.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he's got an incentive to say this, right?
Of course.
Jean-Luc Picard. Jean-Luc. the movie is coming, right? No, that's Star Wars. Jean-Luc Chrétien, man. Why can't everybody's last name be like Singh? So easy, right, Mr. Singh? Anyway, so he says the hotel industry is a service business. It's not a technology business. So technology is digital, just being used to deliver a better quality product for the customer. So he's really talking about it. Now, of course, this is a French-based company, right? It's been around since year 2000, and they're providing e-commerce solutions. And they were actually acquired by French giant Accor Hotels Group.
Okay, right.
So Accor's going to embed their technology into what they're doing. So, and with everything going mobile now, you know, you just got so much more to do. So that's really the story on them, like.
Okay.
I can see we're running out of time, so I just
got so many things to talk about.
So we can go on with that. But yeah, it's true. You think so much travel bookings are being done online. Kind of surprising for someone to say hotels are still behind the curve.
So, okay, MDEC and Google have partnered to boost creative content types. So what's behind the thinking in introducing this program?
Yeah. So the thinking behind this is very simple. It is the fact that MDEC really believes that there's just a lot of creativity in Malaysia, and that you cannot artificially inflate or cannot create. It has to be there. But now people are creative, and you know, YouTube is a great platform because of YouTube. Like Yasmin was saying that actually one of the entrepreneurs said, and then Yasmin said this too, that you know, new media is no more new media; it's now media. Correct. Mm-hmm. YouTube as a video platform is a great leveler. You don't need to go through traditional broadcasters anymore. You can use YouTube as your entry point into the video content industry, and that's what really MDEC wants to do. Just encourage, have this platform. It's a program they actually launched in December of last year with Google. A pilot went on, and they got 20 companies in there, 15 are MSC companies, 5 are independent content creators. Just working with them together with Google on helping them be aware of the tools that are out there when you start using YouTube as a platform. Some of those tools are, of course, your dashboard and helping you monitor where traffic's coming from, peak hours, And some of it is just the fact that sometimes people don't know. When you've got a channel on YouTube, you need regular content almost on a daily basis so that people have a reason to keep coming back. And there was just some of the lessons a lot of them picked up. The tools were already there, but this one-year program helped them sharpen the appreciation of how to use that platform. It's not just put up a video and then expect 100,000 people to watch it on their own. You got to work to make it be known too. So that's the program they're doing, and there were two entrepreneurs there. One was Digital Durian, and they've got a product there with their own IP. So for you, before, the important thing is IP. For you to be in this program, you must own your own intellectual property, because when you own your own intellectual property, that's when you enjoy the margins, right? You're not paying anyone licensing fees to use their product. So this is also an attempt to get people to start creating their own content while owning the IP. And of course, this is one of the pillars of Digital Malaysia too. You've got three pillars, and one of them is to move Malaysians from being consumers of content, to creators of content, from consumers of digital products to creators of digital products. So And I'm trying to move Malaysians up the value chain.
Okay, that's another big one. Kaudim raises $4 million Series A.
Yeah,
so
this was announced
and
yesterday.
This both good news and bad news for the lawyers behind it.
Yeah, so because I interviewed them in December of last year, and they just came out. And they said, look, we're going to give this 1 year to make it work. And if it doesn't work, we'll go back, and we don't think we'll miss a step if we go back into the legal profession. So the bad news is that now that you've raised money, you're not going to be able to go back to the legal profession for a long time. because there's a possibility that you could still go back, because $4 million gives you great, fuel to scale and to get into the region. But it's no guarantee that you will still be able to make this a commercial success.
Right.
But that's just down the road. And I'm sure that ever present possibility will drive them to do better. But the good thing is they've raised $4 million, and it puts them really ahead of all the services-based startups, that are trying to make the same thing. Because obviously when you want to get your home, a plumber in and all that, and everybody knows this, it's such a painful experience. So now they came out last year, they raised angel funding.
There's a lot of these players at the moment.
A lot, yeah. But with them raising $4 million, just puts them ahead of the game. But interesting thing is, this doesn't mean the door is shut for everyone else, right? Because now the others are going to say, hey, look, man, that validates that this market has got great potential. And there'll be people who'll be willing to bet on some of the others too. So you're going to see it's probably at least one of the others, probably raise a similar sum too. Because nobody's going to walk away in Indonesia or in Malaysia or in Vietnam and say, hey, the guys in Malaysia raised $4 million, game over, I think they're going to dominate the market. No, that's not how investors work. That's not how entrepreneurs work. This is going to see another round coming up at some point, someone else coming in or already in raising a next round to challenge them, because this validates that the market potential is there. Fantastic. And it's great, as Malaysians listening, you say, hey, it's great that some Malaysian kids are doing this, right? Because now they'll be hiring more people, creating jobs, and once they're profitable, pay taxes too. All good news then.
Okay.
Down the road. But lots of hard work ahead.
Yeah. Anything reading list?
Reading list, I think we have two. And one was, I think, on Deepavali Day, Asuhan wrote a piece about, I think, Ode to the Desktop.
Ode.
Or why? Ode, not Ode, yeah. Ode, okay. Or why mobile sucks, okay? So you can read that, that's great. Anything Aswan's right is always, lovely to read. And then the next one is the next industrial revolution is going to hurt us bad.
Hurt us bad.
And this is being claimed by Anwar Jumaboy and Sri Krishnan Vadrevu, who both co-wrote this piece. They've actually come up with a book on that. Okay. And this article was just like a teaser about why they feel that next industrial revolution is going to hurt us bad. And it revolves around the Internet of Things. And their answer is entrepreneurship.
All right. And you got to read. That's why you got to. Seven facets. You got to read the article.
Oh, man.
Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. He'll be back for the on the first week of
first
December.
Thursday, yeah.
First Thursday of December. This has been Tech Talk BFM 89.9.
Chakaday.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.